Somebody is more motivated, more intelligent, more ambitious, more greedy, whatever. You're never going to have a society where everyone is equal.
Fair enough.
Unless you impose what I was talking about earlier.
You should have some sort of, well, I mean, there certainly should be equal protection under the law. But as far as people's physical or mental abilities, you're going to have differences.
Well, right, and to me, that's what I go back to.
And motivations as well. Some people are going to be more motivated to do things than others. Some people are going to be more interested in other things than, I mean, not everyone's as good as math, as not everyone understands, mechanics, or there's all different types of inclinations that people have.
Well, I mean, that's why there's supposed to be checks and balances, but one can say those are, those have been twisted over time.
Not checks and balance, but it's the idea of equal protection under the law. And, we're now to a point where, if we're going to take that and extrapolate that to where we're at today in the conversation we just had, there are, corporations have more protection under the law than your average citizen would have. Political power within the legal framework of things. And this is the idea of corporations as being
people,
which is a problem. And I'm not going to accept that corporations are people until Texas executes one. because that's the whole point. People get to the point where they are no longer considered to be socially fit, productive members of society, and they get quarantined, put into solitary, or executed. It doesn't happen with corporations, though.
Do go bankrupt, though.
Oh, well, some of them do. And some of them don't. Some of them should go bankrupt, and some of them don't.
Well, that goes back to the too big to fail argument. I mean, it's like what happened.
But why are some corporations too big to fail and others not?
Well, the banking system, for example. Well, it's what happened in the former Soviet Union when the whole system fell apart. Her parents, they lost their entire, their entire whatever savings for decades.
Sure.
And some of that was probably, no doubt, the oligarchs stole a bunch of it. Electronic transfers gone. But, I don't know how you organize a society where, we're probably living in the best society you could have, all things considered.
I'll say, having not been anywhere else, I would still agree with that statement.
No, what I'm trying to say is you could be
There's a real decline taking place.
No, I agree with that, but
That has, there was this idea after deindustrialization, or as deindustrialization was taking place, that we would then be not a manufacturing economy, we'd be a service-based economy.
Right.
And it's, here we are, 25, 30 years into the service-based economy, and we're looking at the death of manufacturing. A town like Detroit has lost, 70% of its manufacturing jobs just in the last, 15 years or something like that. This amazing decline in manufacturing. And will service-based jobs be able to fill that role? We see that now unemployment's gone down out of the 5 million jobs that were added to the, numbers last fiscal year. Most of those have been low-paying, menial wage jobs, right?
Yeah,
you can always find work, but can you find...
Yeah, but part of it is relative. In other words, if I have an apartment complex, and I want to rent apartments to people, obviously, and if I'm going to charge $2,000 and the local people can only pay me $500, well, I've got to come down on my price. Or I've got to somehow make a deal with the government. So, what I'm trying to say is things balance out over time. The U.S. is just going to become poorer relative to the rest of the world.
But not...
I agree with you. I don't like the way you stated it, and here's why: is because it's not that we're going to become poorer. We're just, and it really is the same thing. There's a slight, very slight difference, but we're just not going to be as wealthy vis-a-vis the rest of the world. I've made this statement before: is like we, as a country, the rest of the world was in tatters after World War II, World War I and II, and then we didn't have some of the same infrastructural problems and some of the same things that they were dealing with, and we got way ahead of everybody, and now it's like we're not going to be able to maintain that lead, and we've got to come to grips with that to a certain extent. I mean, we've got to work out how we come to grips with that. I'm down for that conversation, but it's not going to be America stays out here in front of everyone like this with this massive lead forever. That's not normal, and we should accept that that's not normal, and try to maintain as whatever pace we can, but not make that lead be the end all be all. And I think a lot of people do that. They think of it like they think we're getting poorer. It's not that we're getting poorer. It's just like other people are coming up with us.
Well, or the wealth is getting more distorted. I think it's a large part of it. I mean, America's still going to be the wealthiest country in the world. It's just you're just going to have these huge inequalities of that wealth, and that's really what we're seeing
within our pie. Yeah, absolutely. And that goes back to the question of how do you, or do you care about that first off, and then if you do care that it exists, if you do care. That, like, I saw some graphic representation that, like, 1% has, like, 40% of the wealth in this country or something like that. And if you've got that kind of distribution, I'm not even going to talk about redistribution, but just that distribution, if you see that as problematic, then you have to do something, whether it's legislative, cultural, legal, whatever, I guess I said legislative, but, taxation, whatever it is you're going to do about it, you got to do something. But can we at least agree that is out of balance, out of sync? That's not the way it should be. And I'm looking at you, Russ, because, you're the small little libertarian in the room. And I mean, because that's the real question. It's like, because they didn't get that way just because they were all hardworking. They got that way because they used the bastardized system of, using government cronyism.
Well, that goes back to my point then of having, $50,000. I just threw that number out. Whatever it would be.
Right. Kind of like Alaska has a stipend just
right,
from being there.
Right, and you would try. I mean, I don't know how it would work, but surely
it's not 50 grand though.
Right.
I just threw that number out, but you could do it by lessening your dependency on food stamps, for example, to pay for it partially. You could. There's so many ways you could get enough money.
Some would say that you already get that, in the sense that we have a personal exemption of five, six grand? I don't even know what it is anymore, but you've got that already.
Well, you have it to a certain extent if you want to include Section 8 housing, food stamps, if you want to include earned income tax credit.
Right, the earned income
and so
tax credit.
You already have a certain safety net here. But it comes back to the other point, too.
And it probably does work out to $10,000 or $20,000 if you...
Well, I don't know what the numbers would be, but it could be that high. But, I guess the opposite point of that is that if I have my apartment complex, I have to have renters. So at some point, I have to make an agreement with people that can rent my apartment.
Right,
it has to adjust somehow.
Right,
otherwise,
it has to be allowed to work.
Otherwise, I'm going to be sitting in an empty building. Or whether it's if the farmers produce so much food, it's got to go. It's either got to go somewhere, or it's just going to rot. We've had that before, back with the milk that was thrown out back in the 70s. You probably don't remember that. But
I don't remember that. But
farmers are producing food that's not going to be consumed, though, by human beings.
Well, I understand that, but you look at it from like the last century. It was like 98% of the people worked on farms. Now it's down to less than 2%. That's
sure.
Happening across all spectrum. So
you mean the whole world? You mean?
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, I mean and that's a problem. Like every country in the world.
To build upon what that means. That if you had people living on the land, working the land, they're doing jobs that are generally low-tech, don't require a large amount of education, These aren't specialized jobs necessarily. And, you know, you don't need, you know, a master's degree and all these other things to do it. You can live and eke out an existence doing that. And that was one of the things that America, you know, provided for people, was an opportunity to do that. Whereas in Europe, where a lot of the folks came from, you couldn't have that land. You couldn't just go get that land. I mean, when you had the opportunity in this country to go west, then you could get, you know, your 140 acres, and then you could, if you improved upon that, own that. You could just, because you homesteaded it, it would be yours. And now, you know, people were convinced to come off the land, go to the cities, work there, do these jobs, and now we're getting to a point where
the land's consolidating again.
Well, right, where it's like, I think people kind of, their best opportunity would be then to go back and do that subsistence agricultural lifestyle, because there's really no other opportunities for them. And that's the issue that we're going to have. If we're going to have this decayed, you know, society, what then is society going to say? I mean, if we're going to have a situation where the entire economy of our society was changed for the benefit of industrialization, now that industrialization has gone away, this was manipulated from the beginning to the end, and now we're at the end, and it was an organic process. It was not, you know, some sort of organically driven process. It was something that was heavily manipulated, and now that that's over, I mean, are we just supposed to let things now just balance themselves out? Because if that's the case, it's not going to be pretty. And we're seeing that right now. We're seeing that violence right now. I mean, look at Detroit, for the love of God. I mean, I'm watching this documentary on Detroit where these guys are literally tearing down buildings with chains and pickup trucks to scrap the metal and then take it to then be sent to China. I mean, that's what they're doing. These guys are out there, you know, with torches and chains, ripping down buildings. And that's the only job they can get. That's the only work they can find that, I guess, is worthwhile for them to do. I mean, we could all become greeters at Walmart or whatever it is. And it's just, that is the paradigm shift. That is what needs to take place. And people are already doing that. There's a lot of people who are young who are going, I need to learn how to grow food. You know, because this is something that's satisfying and it's something that has been lost by and large.
I think
and it's been lost in the last 100 years, and now, you know, there's a lot of people going, if I'm going to be part of this new paradigm shift, this is one way that I can incorporate it. I don't know that that's, you know, what I think is the solution. You know, because that's what they talk about with Detroit, is they, you know, they're literally going to be consolidating that town. They have a new urban master plan, which means they're going to get rid of a lot of the city. They're going to just tear it down because they can't afford to maintain the infrastructure. They can't afford to provide the police, fire, and ambulance. Exactly, and relocate citizens. You know, and what are they going to do with that land? There's talk of turning it into large urban farms. I don't think that is necessarily the solution. I don't know that you can say, yes, that's what we should do, because you can't really say that that's going to be an economic solution for people directly. You're not going to be able to then compete with, you know, the factory farms in California, you know, being an urban farmer in Detroit. You know, you can grow your boutique vegetables for the farmer's market, sure. But then going, well, maybe that knowledge isn't completely bad, but it's that new, you know, that paradigm shift that, you know, Russ, that you're talking about. I mean, what exactly does that mean? Is that it's hard to see the solution here, because it's very easy to just pick on corporations, but I mean the solution's not going to come from picking on corporations. It's not going to come from, you know, saying, all right, government, make corporations do this, because corporations are just going to slip out of whatever regulation the government imposes upon them. There's no way to use the government, which is heavily manipulated by the corporation, to then change the corporation's behavior. The only people who are going to be able to do that are, you know, we the people, that kind of thing. And organizing that, figuring out what that would look like, I mean, is certainly possible. But it's amazing because, you know, think about, I mean, it's how many people who are a member of a union shop at Walmart.
I do.
Yeah. So
I'm guilty.
Wouldn't you be? I mean, right? Isn't that a problem?
Well, yeah, it's a problem, but it's like, you know,
isn't that a real big problem? Because, I mean, clearly, you know, Walmart is very antagonistic towards unions, and then you being a member of a union that have benefits of that, I mean, it's just so it's kind of that illogical nature of the way we make excuses for our financial behavior and just go, well, I have to do like that.
Well, when
you know, it's because it's convenient for you, right?
Well, I've given this example before. I won't mention the TV dinner, but I eat a TV dinner. And the store in town that I can get the TV dinner at is like $4.50. I can get the same one at Walmart for $2.50.
Right.
And I don't have a lot of, I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't make a huge amount of money. I know people might think so, but not really. And I'm just saying. So, you know, it's the same problem the post office has with people going to the internet to pay their bills and stuff. They're saving themselves money.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's people are trying to save money any way they can to maintain their lifestyle, I guess.
But, you know, it's a steady decline, right?
Well, yeah, but
that's
all
it is. And I mean, hey, you know, the post office has its problems. That's neither here nor there. I fully understand why somebody would want to pay their bills online as opposed to use stamps.
Well, it's more efficient.
The possibility that your letter might not even make it there. Because I've had my issues with the post office. But in reality, if we're talking about something the way Walmart has a manipulation of the wage scale and changes everything, I mean, it's just immense. I mean, it really is. And that's just one example. And that, you know, it just broadens out. It just becomes bigger and bigger. And so if people are willing to continue to support, you know, entities that are, you know, generally, you know, bad for their situation, their communities. I mean, it's the same way that you have a large amount of low-income people who vote with the CEOs and corporatists of this country because of some sort of coalition of social values that, you know, Rush Limbaugh doesn't care about, you know, the religious right. That's not why he's a Republican. That's not what the people who listen to him for. I mean, he touches on those subjects, but only for very, you know, calculated political reasons. I mean, he's there for money. He's there because he comes from, you know, a different class of people financially. But, you know, in the last 30 years, you've had this manipulation of what it means to be conservative in this country, and you've had this coalition of two groups that may be changing now. Because you have a couple of different variables that have changed. And I guess one of those big ones would be the Latino voter and how that will play out. But you have all kinds of dynamics here that you have people voting and doing things on a daily basis that, I mean, forget about voting. People that are engaging in economic activity on a daily basis that are against their own best interest in a short term and a long term.
Yeah, but I think
because
part of it...
you shouldn't eat TV dinners, Russ.
Yeah, but I think, well, these are the more healthy ones. But,
oh, yeah, there you go.
But I do buy my socks at Walmart, and they are made in the United States.
Cool, man.
Well, I try to buy things that it says made in the U.S., but it's hard to find in a lot of cases.
No, right, but my point is, you know, you being a member of a
union... No, I understand the hypocrisy.
Shopping at a Walmart, I mean...
No, I understand the hypocrisy, but that's the way... You know, I think to be an American, you have to be a hypocrite. It's almost a requirement to be. You have to be a hypocrite, in one sense or another.
Or sold out.
Or sold out in one sense or another. So, you know.
It's hard to move anywhere. It's hard to get any, you know, change direction and, or maybe continue in a direction if that's the case. Though, I mean, I think that's the way a lot of people feel about it. Anyway.
I mean, wasn't it Chairman Mao that said that you go to through capitalism to get to communism?
I thought that was Karl Marx that said that.
Well, Karl Marx, perhaps. But, you know, it may come down to that here where in order to...
yeah, but I mean, communism, the way... you know, in reality, what you would have then is not some sort of... it would just be another form of tyranny. I mean, there's a form of tyranny we already have here in America. That's generally what we talk about on this program.
Well, I understand it, but what I'm saying
and to
is...
get communism is not really going to provide us with some better economic benefit. It's just going to be another form of tyranny.
No, but what I'm saying is... like,
that's why the people of the Soviet Union...
Isn't that just the way of life? After, I mean, the history of this planet is tyranny.
Yeah, maybe so.
Right. Maybe. Yeah, go ask the Pharaoh.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm saying make that argument.
Right.
Make that argument. But I believe, because... we're in America. We're supposed to be idealistic to a certain degree. Maybe not Russ, but me and you.
Well, no, I'm talking about
me and you, Mike, can be a little idealistic, and that's the whole point. Is that might be the case? Make that argument, but then again, you have to go. Well, what is the possibility? There's an opportunity here. What is the possibility for that opportunity?
Well, what I'm talking about is when you're talking about what's happening in Chicago or Detroit, where people are tearing down the houses for the metal.
Chicago does not have near the problems that Detroit does.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that at some point, society is going to say, you know, we have to have some stability. And at that point, I could see either a fascist-type government or a communist government taking over. I mean, either one would solve a lot of economic, you know, inequalities here.
But we've already got the fascists. So.
Well...
I mean, we're borderline. I mean, we have some sort of small f fascism going on.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's in large part the case, because you have a certain system of government that's based upon fear in some regards, and, you know, corporate state, you know, manipulation in others. That's existed for some time now.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same. It's like with General.
It's kinder and it's gentler. I mean,
well, it's like with General Electric. You know, there's only one General Electric's the only company that can build nuclear submarines here. So, in other words, if it's not subsidized by the government and it shuts down, all those skills in order to build nuclear submarines would vanish.
I'm good with that.
Well, I'm just
a nuclear submarine. I mean, I'm not. It does not provide me any benefits.
Well, it does provide some benefits. It helps maintain the infrastructure around, say the place where it's built, manufactured. It does provide high income paying jobs.
But see, that goes back to what I was saying about the choice of what we are going to do with our society, and the possibilities that you're talking about require the responsibility of we the people, once again, to say this is what we want to spend our blood and treasure on, right? Because you're absolutely right. It provides an infrastructure around those military technologies and installations and products and bases and all of that stuff. But
the citizens of the town surrounding Auschwitz may have said the same thing as well.
Exactly.
Like these guard towers, these high-paying guard tower jobs.
Use those government subsidies to do other things in this country that need to be done to acknowledge and accept the fact that, you know, we don't live in a frontier society anymore where, hey, we need to build sewers, so let's all get together and put this thing together. And you do it because I was just listening to a thing about the Chicago River. You know, the Chicago River is not really a river, and it's like this conduit that goes opposite the way nature demands, because they had sewage issues in Chicago. And so in the 1800s, they were doing these massive projects, or late 1800s, but before it actually happened. It was like right before the Panama Canal. I mean, the way they made the Panama Canal was modeled off of what they did in Chicago. And they created this river to get rid of the sewage in that city because they had to. Well, now you're talking about Kansas City being in this situation where you go somewhere, you flush the toilet, it works 99.8% of the time, and you go, that's not an issue. Nobody's gonna get excited about rebuilding the sewers. You know what I'm saying? We get excited about building some new project like Power and Light or some new world corporation headquarters or something like that. And we've got to take the responsibility to say, no, we don't want to spend our money on these military-industrial complex, these kinds of things. We want to, you know, it's okay that's how we spend the money that we have in this country on rebuilding our infrastructure, updating our infrastructure. Because it's not a homestead situation anymore. It's not... Like, the city is growing and developing, and what used to be like all this empty land is now out there, and we're growing out there. It's like this city is here, and it's crumbling from inside, and we've got to fix that. And it's not just this city. Like you said, we've already mentioned Chicago, Detroit. I've mentioned Kansas City. Any city is having these problems. And if we're not dealing with those coordinated, I think on a national level even, you know what I'm saying? That if we spend that time and energy in those things, then those same skills that you're talking about, you know, nuclear submarine skills, the skills needed to build a nuclear submarine. Yeah, there's all that ancillary use for that stuff, because what they use to make a nuclear submarine, we suddenly find that, hey, you can use that to make a better pacemaker or something, you know. So it's not like there's not value that comes out of that stuff. But if we apply that to problems that are very real problems, as opposed to problems that are largely like, oh, those people might come over here and attack us, so we need to have a strong military presence. And even though our military is stronger than the next 10 combined, we still got to maintain that kind of lead. No, we don't have to maintain that kind of lead. We can do something different. I don't know if that made any sense.
No, it did, and I think that mentality is what destroys the idealism.
What, that we
of the country?
That
no,
we
no,
won't
that we have
that?
There are things to be afraid of. That, you know, if we stop the military-industrial complex, we'll destroy the economy of certain parts of this country, and potentially the whole economy of this country. And if we don't have, you know, a boogeyman to fear, or if we're not afraid of this existential threat. And we're not afraid of it. If we're not prepared to handle this existential threat, that America will be in harm's way.
Yeah, but that's always a rallying cry, though.
Yeah, for fascism.
Well, for everybody, though. It rallies the whole country. I mean, it's like, it goes back to language, borders, and culture.
I mean, there was a rallying, there was a concept of that did take place about 12 years ago.
But hardwired, things got hardwired, or they're firming up now. I mean, but they got, you know,
they're just a distraction.
But they have real consequences, though, right? Because we
absolutely
it was absolutely a distraction.
They create apathy.
But here we have this Homeland Defense monstrosity that's in place now, and that is just more military spending.
Well, exactly.
You know what I mean? Instead of us stopping, you know, I kind of think of it like, you know, I don't like bees. I'm afraid of bees sometimes. So I have, at different points in my life, seen bees and took off running down the street. And there came a point when I stopped and said, all right, let's get rational here, Mike. I got to go on with what I was doing. I can't go do it down there because there's a bee over there. So I have to be rational about what I'm doing and go back and reclaim a sense of normalcy. That's where we are in America. We're still jogging down the street, and we need to stop and go like, well, wait a second. We don't need this home.
But we're not real. But we're not really. Most people
we're not doing it. We need to.
But most people are incredibly apathetic about this notion of terrorism. Most people are not concerned with it whatsoever. It's something that becomes it's something that gets taken for granted. It's a given in the situation of our country. Is that, you know, I mean, how many people, I mean, you do have some who want to have some sort of unified enemy, you know, want to blame the situation on something. I mean, you can blame it on, we need an enemy, you know, and it's kind of a, you know, so screw those Muslims. And man, the enemy of our economy are those Mexicans. You can just
right.
say, screw those people.
Right.
There's the problem. I'm not going to look anywhere closer to my reality than that.
Right. And we have the responsibility, which again is why I love doing the show and love the fact that these conversations take place, is that we have to have the responsibility, take the responsibility to look inward and stop overreacting, stop allowing those kinds of... they're not they're just not real. I mean, they're over. They're, you know what I mean? It's like if you blame the Mexican immigration problem on, or Mexican immigration on the problem, or you make that
on Mexicans.
If you blame that on the economy, you know.
No, if you blame the Mexicans for the economy.
Right, there you go.
Because
you.
The problem with illegal immigration is because of the economy.
Right. But we see
of this country and that
allow,
country.
But it, at some point, we will. And this is where the optimism comes in, right, is that we will, or at least a significant enough portion of us will acknowledge that and start to make the changes so that it's not a, that we...
There's an there is an enabling of that mindset that is allowed to persist because it's a benefit to the power structure.
Mm-hmm.
Because instead of people going, "What the hell is going on behind the curtain?" they're like, "Yeah, clearly it's these Mexicans. Yeah, clearly it's these Muslims."
Right.
Because think about the. I mean, if our part of the fight when it comes to the Middle East is based upon our resources, and now they're saying that because of what's taking place in Egypt, that there might be an issue with the shipping lanes for the, you know, Suez Canal in regards to oil shipments, you know. America, for the first time since the early 70s, is now exporting more oil than it's importing. Am I saying that right? We are a net exporter of oil. We are
right.
Still importing oil, but we are. It's to the point where we're still relying upon foreign oil, but we're also exporting, you know, as much as we're importing.
Right.
You know, and that's a bizarre reality. So here we are doing that.
But that's a reality that
we
says
don't have
if
to.
We,
well,
if
but
we
don't
didn't do that, we could be okay. We could be self-sustaining.
Exactly, but that's not any. That's, I mean, certainly
it's not on anybody's
you can
radar.
You can read that and go, "Wow, America's finally gotten off its dependence on foreign oil," but that's so far from the reality of the situation.
Right.
We could be off our, you know, our relationship with that area of the world, with the Middle East, but that's not the case. I mean, these situations, for economic and other reasons, are very important to the structure of the way this government operates, which is, I mean, the way the society and economy operates, which is not, to say very simply, not for the benefit of people, or most of the people, anyway.
I disagree with that. I disagree because, you know, I've said this before, something like, the poorest person here is better off than 80% of the people on the planet.
And how long has it been that way?
For a long time.
Probably forever.
Right. Okay,
I'm just saying there's a...
So then how is it that the situation that we are in this country post-World War II, you know, is dependent upon what you just said, if the idea of being poor in this country is better than being poor anywhere else, has existed since way before the Bretton Woods global military empire of America system began?
Well, I'm looking at it from like the gross domestic product. You know, it's like $16 trillion now.
Okay.
So no, what I'm trying to say is that whether you like it or not, or anyone likes it, we are living. You know, the United States is an empire.
I'm not arguing with that.
Well, no, I'm just saying that it in order to prop up the worthless dollar, you've got to have 140 military bases, or how many we have.
No doubt, and you know the situation being is that we find ourselves in the middle of a globalized economy that is not for the benefit of people.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but on the other hand.
So then, if the situation where we're in that, like you just said, like I'm talking about oil and the fact that America is a net exporter of oil. For the first time since the early 70s.
Well, that's not really true. You got that backwards. Actually, I hate to correct you, but actually, there's some laws that the U.S. oil companies cannot export U.S. oil. We are a net exporter of finished products.
Okay.
For the first time. Because there's actually some where the government has forced oil companies here for national security reasons.
To keep the oil here.
Yeah, and they're fighting against that because other countries will pay a higher price per barrel. But, you know, like if you look around the world, like...
That can't apply to Alaskan oil, though.
Well, I'm not sure about Alaskan oil.
Because most of that goes to Japan, I believe.
Well, I'm not sure about Alaskan oil. But, you know, most of the oil in the world is not controlled by the U.S. oil, or by U.S. oil companies. It's controlled by national governments. The U.S. is an exemption to that. So what I'm trying to say is like, you hear this fake thing that the U.S. oil companies are controlling the world supply of oil. That's just not true.
Well, the control comes from the trading of oil.
Well, right, which is way above, way out there in the stratosphere somewhere.
Well, when you say the national governments control the oil, they still.
But to go, I mean, but the point
through those same international. Government or international country or what? The oil companies.
Well, I mean, they're not necessarily like.
Would you say? I'm guessing you're saying like Nigeria is one that's
it's under
the government's control. But let's be honest, they're not processing, drilling, refining the oil. That's the companies that are coming in doing that, and they're kind of like going, okay, as long as we're getting ours.
Well, right, but like for, you know, Saudi Arabia.
For them, oil, not for their people.
Oil from the Middle East, though, is controlled through the governments.
And right,
just like it is in Mexico. Just like it is in Mexico.
But
it's not the Saudi dollar that oil is sold in.
Well, no, that's true.
And it's not the Saudi. And it's not the Saudi guy who walks in and goes, "This is how we're going to operate our oil."
But not to confuse what's
being done.
This idea of American oil. I mean, America is producing more petroleum.
No, that's true.
More crude oil than we have in four generations or four decades.
No, that's true.
And that's a big deal. And it's an even bigger deal that it's not creating any type of economic benefit for people.
For us, right.
Well, the argument...
It's an even bigger deal.
Yeah, but the argument for that would be that you know, I'm going to have to go into this direction, but that your environmentalists and so forth, they have stopped any new expansion of new oil refineries in the United States. They've sued them to death. You know, what you may think, well, no, it's actually a cabal of wealthy oil, you know, tycoons that are trying to keep the price up.
No, it's globalism is the reality of the situation, is that if you are in South Dakota mm-hmm. pulling oil out of the ground like it's, you know, 1950 in Midland, Texas or something like that, then you are not selling that oil based upon the economy of South Dakota. Now, the barrel of oil is not being, you know, that value is not a regional economy. It's being based upon what oil is selling for in, you know, Shanghai.
No, I understand
Mumbai.
That.
Mumbai. I mean, it's not a, you know, just a wealthy cabal oil, you know, company executives. That's a cabal of all types of forces.
Well, what I'm trying to say, though, is like that oil, that excess oil, if it was being processed here into more refined products, then the price of gas would come down here. Now you can argue.
But you
that
were just saying a moment ago that the exports that we have are refined oil products.
Well, yeah, they've gone up. But what I'm trying to say is, if there was some kind of government restriction,
how much refined petroleum products do we import?
I don't know.
I don't think. I mean, I think that's the point. I think that primarily you have the oil refining done here in America.
No, what I'm saying though is, well, that's true.
And certainly, we could have more oil refining capacity.
Well, right, but that goes back to
the reason why oil or gallons of gasoline are so expensive is because you have, you know, crude oil, not refined oil,
mm-hmm.
not refined petroleum products.
Well, no,
so expensive. I mean, how much is a barrel of oil this week? $120. It's going
to
be.
No, but what I'm saying is it goes back to your point about the global economy. If those finished products, those extra finished products were sold here, the price of gasoline would come down. But they can, the overseas markets are willing to jack the price up higher. And that goes back to maybe, you know, maybe the oil company should be nationalized here for the interest of, I don't know, Americans.
Now, that's a very small libertarian thing to say.
Well, I mean, the oil company in, or oil in Alaska is nationalized for interest of Alaskans. I think, you know, the broader point is that the economy of the globe is bad for individuals all over it.
That's a real one
that we're finding as the years pass on for it to be more and more harmful.
Well, what's going to be interesting?
And again, with the solution to it all, I mean, is localism. And what that means is a lot of different things.
Well, the futurist would like to say that, you know, as more and more jobs become automated, then the unit price of things will come down so much that you could practically give them away. So in that sense, society becomes wealthier. I mean, I don't know how many people I've seen walking around with smartphones that are like, you know, 12 years old. I'm like, well, what do they need a smartphone?
I mean, that's the same argument that Walmart has when they move into a community.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, we've depressed the wage scale, but
right.
We've offered you a whole bunch of amazing savings. We've rolled back prices. And your wages.
Sounds like a commercial.
And your wages. But it's great to have us around, isn't it? And I mean, I don't know that that is a quality argument, because you can't just say, you can't just, you know, equate standard of living with, you know,
goods.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's.
I know that's what gets done.
Yeah, but as long as you had, what are the things you really want as a person? What, food, shelter, and clothing? I mean, that's pretty much it, right? Clean water, I suppose.
No, and a smartphone, and a tablet, and a bunch of apps.
Well, right, but
and an Xbox 360, and a flat screen TV.
And how many people have those things here in the United States? A lot.
Most everyone, yeah.
But I mean, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with the picture somewhere. And the only reason we can have those things is because of technology, where more and more things are automated.
You know how negative the smartphone has been for politicians? We're starting to realize that. Had a lot more faith in... I mean, just imagine the situation that this country would have been faced with if Bill Clinton had the ability to text pictures of his penis to people.
All I'm saying is, you can send me as many pictures as you want. I don't understand. I would never send. And why would a guy send a picture to a woman? Because don't universally women don't really want to see that? I mean, guys want to see, women not so much.
Yeah, you might be surprised. But I think you have a generally really good point here. In that, everyone wants to, you know, because of our wonderful technology, everyone wants to be a porn star. Because that's what everyone uses. How much of the internet traffic is straight up pornographic?
That would be a very interesting statistic. More than you would think.
Yeah, I'm 20%.
Oh, easily that. Probably 30%.
Right.
Probably more than in, like, let's say 1970s print.
Oh, yeah. And then if you want to include Snapchat in with this.
Well, you know what region of the world has the highest porno internet activities in the Middle East?
Well, I would imagine so. Probably Saudi Arabia.
That whole suppression thing.
Just imagine if Bill Clinton had the ability to send pictures of himself to just anybody.
Right.
Like how much different things would be.
Lucky for him they didn't have that.
Yeah, he's probably very much so in the benefit for that.
I mean, suppressing that technology.
It's quite amazing.
Well, just think how World War II would have played out if people had smartphones. I don't know. I just threw that out there, but
I was waiting for something.
Well, no, just think about the old movies, though. If people, you know, if you would, smartphones or any type of cell phones, like in old movies, the whole thing would be rewritten. The whole script would have to be rewritten.
Yeah, everyone, you know, would be texting each other. God, I was watching some file footage of some people from the 90s
and everyone, it was like a large crowd of people walking, and everyone was smoking, and nobody had a cell phone. And now everyone would have a cell phone, and nobody would be smoking.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
It's kind of the flip that's taken place.
In fact, I shouldn't tell on myself like this, but I nearly had a head-on collision with a lady last week. We were both walking and texting and interacting with
our phone. Oh, you were not in a car.
We were walking.
Right.
And we damn near walked into each other. And I was like, oh, sorry. It's like, wow.
That could be a new app.
That's scary. Yeah, a little personal. smartphone, proximity alert.
Right.
Except it'd be going off when you were, like, cuddling up to your baby.
As your baby was...
You're, like, cuddling up, hey, baby, give me a kiss, and your phone's like, wah, wah, wah. Proximity alert, I think you're going to run into each other.
Right.
That's the plan. Well, that's...
All right, 15 minutes until 3 o'clock when we'll have a brand new Suicide 284 here on Community Radio in the 21st Century. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you're welcome to do so. 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. So, we just had a really long conversation about globalism and how great it's been and the future. I mean, you know, because it's interesting, Russ. There needs to be a paradigm shift, and it's not going to be a $50,000 stipend. I don't believe that you can give people money and have any type of great benefit come out of that situation.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? I don't think you're going to get... It's just like within the Great Society of LBJ. When they built, you know, huge inner-city high-rises for people to live in, and gay people... you don't get ownership by giving people stuff.
But that was giving them... No, I'm not arguing the point, because I got to go back and finish listening to one of the podcasts I listened to. They were talking about this very thing, that there was a guy who was looking at international aid and basically came up with the idea that... so much of it is wasted in, you know, we got to, it's all administrative costs. So his charity, and I need to finish listening to the examination of it, but his charity, basically, that's exactly what they do, is they give people $1,000 in like impoverished countries. Like, here's $1,000. Do what you will. You want
to
go drink it up?
Absolutely.
That's your deal.
Let's
but
go get
there
some Modelo's.
But I would submit to you that there are many, many people who would recognize that opportunity in their real world existence and would start to scratch out a better life for themselves and thereby spread that money in their own local economy, not. When we say, okay, we're going to send $10 million in aid over to some country, but what that means is we're going to spend, you know, $8 million on administrative costs because we got to train all these kids that are going to go over there and spend a month in, you know what I mean? Because, like, I was listening to somebody talking about going to volunteer in other countries. And not realizing how much of a cost there is involved in that. You know, just for you to go over there, just the whole medical, you know, vaccinations and things like that you got to be aware of and take into account, as well as cultural learnings that you have to, and that stuff has to be with its own infrastructure that has to be brought up. And so much money gets spent in training and preparation that, you know, what would the effect be if it was just, bam, here it is, straight to you? I mean, we saw this in the 90s when they started micro-lending, right?
Oh, right. I mean, that a loan is different.
Well, but it's the idea of getting it into the community and into the people who need it rather than like, oh, I'm going to give Bono $10 million, and he's already got it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And not that he's using your money, but you know what I'm saying? It's that that the when you try to do it on these massive scales, then
you get rid of you get rid of the filter.
Right. And I think you would find that that goat herder,
administrative costs of United Way, et cetera.
Right. And I think if you would find that if that goat herder had $1,000, it would be much better than $10,000 being sent his way but never really getting to him.
I mean, we already have a society where this is happening, whether it's 50,000 or not, because we are going to have a society where there are millions of people, for whatever reason, you know, X, Y, or Z, are never going to ever do anything that's constructive. They're just not, for whatever reason. And society has been carrying the, you know, and every year those numbers get more and more.
Well, and we talked about this earlier. You mentioned it, you know, as we become technologically proficient and,
well, exactly.
and as things happen, there's just not going to be room. So in a way, I kind of see this see the truth in the statement, you got to go through capitalism to get to communism, because when you get to this stage of capitalism, you know, we're very close to a point where it's like it doesn't take as many people to
right.
do.
But within
what's
communism,
necessary.
The whole idea is that they wanted to... You know, wanted the workers to own the factories. And we're kind of talking about how there's no factories anymore. The hell are we going to do in communism? I mean, what are the people going to control in regards to the means of production? If we're talking about actual communism as opposed to communism that has been practiced.
Well, you're talking about a communism that was dreamt up and what... brought to the page by somebody in 1840? When did he write that, the Communist Manifesto?
It was 1840s, 1850s.
Okay, so factory was it. He didn't know about a smartphone. He didn't know about, you know, offshore drilling. He didn't know about, you know, these places and things that would happen that would come down the pike. So it's got to be, you know, it's got to be changed. So it's not going to be owning the factory. It's the means of production, which at this point become less...
Well, what it means is, like, if there's robots producing cars and it eliminates 99% of the workers...
What are those people going to do?
What it means is that company is going to have to subsidize, you know, the cars for I can buy one.
And so they're going to have to subsidize the living through... Somehow the society is going to have to subsidize those people who are no longer working to do that.
Well, exactly.
In some way. And when I say society, I don't mean necessarily organized as a government. I mean, whether it's new markets, which there are, but not nearly enough and or sufficient. I mean, to say that, you know, what was it, the Clinton-Bush debate way back in 92, they were talking about, you know, computer chips and potato chips
yeah,
are not the same freaking thing. But the reality of it is, that's what you're going to be replacing it with. You know what I mean? You're going to be replacing these high-end jobs with low-end jobs, because the high-end jobs are either being shipped offshore, you know what I mean? Either that manufacturing base is being shipped away, or, you know, there's just less need for the manufacturing.
Let's go to the phones. 816-931-5534. You're on the radio.
There's a lot of things to comment about. First of all, I'd just like to say, go back earlier, you said call in about your race comments and all that.
Cool. Go for it.
First of all, to me, there's only one race. It's the human.
There you go.
And then I want to say, why do we have to call it race? I mean, what's the hurry?
Oh.
First of all,
boom.
You know, second of all, you were talking about, yeah, we can go to Walmart. Everybody in the United States can get a flat screen at Walmart a lot cheaper. Can I get a nice suit at Walmart?
It all depends on your definition of nice suit.
You know, maybe the government can help me subsidize going over to Jose Banks or Vince. Give me a nice suit so I can get a nice job.
No, right. I mean, I think Walmart sells suits that are generally acceptable for court. But if you want to get a nice job, you are going to have to go get one of those nice fitted suits from
this
one of the...
This is true.
But nobody needs a suit anymore, let's be realistic. I mean, I don't think that's like... I've seen people show up for job interviews that just blow me away, but...
And then this goes back to the race thing, right? But, so, see, if I walk in on the street, no matter what color he is, if he's wearing a suit, have a different opinion of him than if he's wearing a T-shirt and a pair of shorts.
Right. Well, that might be true. Or an oversized white shirt and some sagging pants that are hanging off your bow tie.
You just have a different viewpoint. If a guy in a suit comes up to you and is like, he starts trying to have a conversation, you're more willing to talk to him.
Or if a guy in a suit comes up and goes, "Yo, man, you got 50 cents?" I'd be like, "I guess so. Sure. Here you go, sir."
Well, maybe not, but you're probably more willing to give a guy in a suit 50 cents than you are a guy in a T-shirt.
Unless it's a really nice T-shirt.
Okay. There, like I said, there's a lot of things to comment on, but I just want to put that out there, man. Only one race.
The human race. I'm down with that.
That's it.
We're all one species.
I've got a little clip I'm going to play a little bit later.
All right, take care, man.
After the suicide, if now I'm having these technological problems with my phone. But
what's wrong with your smartphone?
Is
it you or your phone?
I feel bad because you guys are going to like laugh at me. Because I had to make some changes in my plan. I got my kid a smartphone. He's 17, going on 17.
Oh, that's
better. Not 12. But that doesn't make it any better. But anyway, but I think there was a mix-up that somehow I lost my data connection because ever since we did that yesterday, well, I didn't notice it until this morning when I tried to do some stuff that I can no longer get internet connection, so I can't get on my banking site. I can text. That's it. And I don't like texting.
Hmm.
So.
And there's no Wi-Fi here. So. What do you
I know
do?
That's the other problem. See, but I think I'll still be able to get it. I don't know. You may have heard of Tim Wise. Have you?
Oh yeah.
Either of you heard of
this
guy? And I was going to play a little clip where he talks about race and how that is an artificial concept that, like, was kind of created because we needed it, not we. You guys, no. But seriously, you know, it was a necessary concept to perpetuate, you know, the power control,
right,
of the elite.
Keep poor people fighting amongst themselves.
Right. And it's one of those things that, I don't know, I just seem like, I feel like I just kind of knew it intuitively, because I remember as a small kid thinking, man, we're just kind of divided, like fighting over the scraps we're like, the general population is like a pack of dogs fighting over the scraps, and there's like this fat guy sitting there with a nice steak that he probably paid more than $12
probably
for.
Right.
And it's probably bigger than 18 or 8 ounces. You know what I mean? It's like this gigantic.
It's a really little steak.
You know, it's like, because you know, it was pretty cool. I mean, because he went into the whole concept of, like, again, you know, how do you get all those people we see, you know, Ken Burns documentary and these people riding home, they didn't own slaves. But they were fighting.
Oh, now we're talking
to
Civil War.
To perpetuate slavery.
But they didn't view themselves as doing that.
Right. Because they were flim-flammed by this race question, which had been put into effect, you know, 150, 200 years earlier.
They were fighting for glory, like I said. Like,
right. No,
talked
absolutely.
Talked about this very early
absolutely.
In the show.
And I played a little clip of that last week talking about, you know, how the American notion of glory, like Teddy Roosevelt as a kid, and even I think, was that in the part that I played last week where, like, he was before the war of the Spanish-American War, he was in government and he in the Department of War, and he basically went and said, "This is what we're going to need to do, and I'm going to let you know if we're going to war. I'm quitting and I'm going,
right?
Because I'm going to get me some of that glory," like you said. And we would today call that a psychopath, maybe. Not necessarily, because there are those among us who still feel, hoorah, you're a great American.
Right. Well,
I mean, we perpetuate that when we do that very thing, when we start.
There were men like that right after 9/11. I think Pat Tillman is a really
and
good
even
example.
That, right. And even after. I mean, even today, people are kind of flim-flammed into that whole thing. I brought this up last week when I said, if you say to someone, so tell me exactly how are you defending my freedoms by going over there and doing these things, you know,
the two engagements that we're in now, or at least in Afghanistan, people will try and make that case.